The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
On the 20th of December 2004, £26.5 million was stolen from the Northern Bank in Belfast in what was then the biggest bank heist in Irish and British history. Building on his award-winning podcast of the same name, Glenn Patterson's latest book, The Northern Bank Job, sheds new light on that heist. And Glenn joins me now. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Where began your fascination with the Northern Bank heist?
Well, you said it was on the 20th of December 2004, the £26.5 million went from the Northern Bank on Donegal Square West in Belfast. And my fascination or interest began the same night. I was actually in Belfast city centre on that night. The Northern Bank headquarters and cash centre is about 50 feet from the grounds of the City Hall. And it's also where my bus stops when I go into the city centre. This could not have been a more public robbery 5 nights before Christmas. And like many thousands of other Belfast citizens, I was actually in town that night. When I woke the next day to the news of the breaking news of the robbery, the scale of the robbery, like a good many other people, I was stunned by the scale of it. But also by the fact that it had happened while almost in full view.
Now, you go through the heist in some detail, and it involves two employees of the bank. One is a manager, the other is an underling, shall we say. Will you explain how the heist unfolded?
The night before the day of the robbery, so this was it was the Monday before Christmas, the busiest shopping weekend of the year had just finished, and the Northern Bank Centre, being the cash centre for the Northern Bank, would have been almost literally awash with money. It was where the money that came in was sorted. Where money that was coming in for cash machines for distribution was delivered. So the basement of the Northern Bank was where all this money flowed through. And the robbers knew that the last few days before Christmas was the time when there was going to be a lot of cash in there. So two of the employees, Kevin McMullen and Chris Ward, the night before the robbery took place, their homes were taken over by the robbers. Their families were held hostage. And the next morning, they were made to go into the bank as normal. They were the key holders for the cash centre. And they were given really detailed instructions of how they were to remove as much money as they could from the bank on the evening of the 20th of December.
Now, it's an extraordinary story. I mean, it beggars belief. You've got a couple of guys in a van wearing very phony-looking wigs who are going to drive the van to pick up the stuff. You've got two people inside who have to go about their normal working day as if nothing is wrong, and they have to indulge in all sorts of active subterfuge, make phone calls, and suddenly there's no signal inside the bank. They have to go to an area, perhaps even outside the bank, where they can make a call. They have to go about buying their sandwich and Coke in the usual way. And yet, the pressure they're under, because in the case of one of them, his family is being held hostage. In the case of the other, his wife is being held hostage.
It is. I mean, the pressure that they were under in the course of that day cannot be overstated. There was a trial run in which Chris Ward was ordered to remove £1.2 million. Essentially, he had to fill a kit bag that he had brought in with him to work. He had to fill that with banknotes and walk out past the reception desk, the security, to a bus stop just around the corner from the bank and set the bag on the ground. And somebody was to come along, pick up the bag and walk away with it. And this was really just to ensure that the police weren't onto the robbers. So that happened about an hour just before the big action, as yeah, it was referred to, began. But yes, their families were being held hostage. And This was one of a number of tiger kidnappings that had occurred in the previous 12 months. And in the case of the wife of Kevin McMullen, in the case of Karen McMullen, her treatment in the 24 hours that she was held was appalling, terrifying, and although this is often talked about as a bit of a caper, £26.5 million, and it's often stated that nobody was hurt, I think if you just sat and listened or read again the account of what happened to Karen McMullen during those hours, you would not think this was a victimless crime at all. Yeah. And indeed, the Ward family, for all that the conditions in which they were held were different, there's still the strain on them not knowing what is happening to their son is also really, really severe.
Now, the cover of your book has a picture of the aforementioned Chris Ward leaving the bank with the holdall over his shoulder. It's quite an extraordinary picture. Literally walked out with over £1 million in that bag as part of the dress rehearsal. And the rest of it went pretty much like clockwork. A few hiccups along the way, but they did get away with a huge amount of money that night. Some of it brand new notes destined for those cash machines, the ATMs, and others of it, the stuff that had been in circulation through retailers and which ended up for sorting. So were they able to, once they discovered what had happened, were they able to stop any of that cash from being used?
Well, the Northern Bank did quite quickly. It recalled all the notes from a particular run, and I make a point of saying in the book that the fact that we have banks are able to issue their own notes here is of significance in this. So there were some traceable Northern Bank notes and new notes, and by recalling that run, it certainly shortened the time that those were in circulation. So in that sense, although they never recovered any of those notes, they, I suppose, put them beyond the use of the robbers. But there were still many millions of untraceable notes in circulation. And I was interested in the heist, but I was also interested in what happened afterwards and how that money was laundered. I would be very quick to say I do not understand money laundering, and try as I might, but I think I followed the journey of some of those banknotes through the months that followed.
Yeah. Now we know that we had the Good Friday Agreement in 1998, and it took a long time for the Assembly to finally get up into a stable institution. So we're still in a period of flux. The IRA's, you know, standing down, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the common belief, maybe in not just Republican circles, but pretty much abroad, right across the island of Ireland, was that this was a retirement fund for paramilitaries who were no longer in action.
The retirement fund, that theory was floated quite early on. I think if you listen to a number of people who were much closer to the provisional IRA than I am, some of them would say that if it was a retirement fund, very few people ever saw any of it. So I think that's, again, that sort of comes under the caper headings. You know, it's like one of those things that it's not really that bad a thing at all, or it's explicable in some way. And certainly there was a thought that perhaps the British and Irish governments may have been prepared to turn a blind eye to some of the activities in the months leading up to the Northern Bank robbery, the smaller heists, because this was the bigger prize of the Good Friday Agreement and getting the institutions back up and running. At the time of the robbery, the first governments in power sharing were the Unionist Party and the SDLP. By the time we get into the early 2000s, what we're heading towards is the power sharing between Sinn Féin and the DUP. We're at a very delicate moment in that process in December 2004. And there was certainly a belief that that the governments didn't really want to push too hard on this. But a combination of events, I think, made it impossible for them to ignore what was pretty clearly the work of the Provisional IRA in the Northern Bank robbery. And then very quickly after that, the murder in Belfast of Robert McCartney by members of the Provisional IRA in a bar in Belfast city centre in January 2005.
Yeah. And when you talk about the murder of Robert McCartney in that bar and the cleanup that was operated thereafter, how almost forensic it was to leave no trace, names taken in that bar so that they could find people who may decide to tell the police about what had happened. All of that is pretty gruesome and pretty telling of the mindset of the Republican movement at that time.
It was, and the cleanup in the bar after the murder of Robert McCartney, which was the 30th of January 2005. And what happened afterwards, the people who had been involved in the murder locked all the customers inside, wiped the place down. And it's actually very reminiscent of what happened in the Northern Bank robbery. So two houses were taken over, and the members of the gang who took over the McMullen house and the Ward house were constantly cleaning, constantly removing all traces that they had been there or who it was that had been there. So there was a similarity in the modus operandi of the in the aftermath of the murder of Robert McCartney, and in the Northern Bank robbery, as one of the members of the gang who took over the Ward household said to the family, said, "We've done this before." And I think that's one of the things that was quite apparent, was the level of organisation, how quickly after an event as grotesque as the murder of Robert McCartney, this organisation would kick in and take over. And so I think that more than anything, the murder itself is appalling. I think it was in the aftermath of it that a lot of concern would have been raised in government circles, and eventually in the American government, and through Robert McCartney's sisters and partner, they made sure that was that nobody lost sight of what had happened. And I think pressure was eventually brought to bear on the IRA and on Sinn Féin by the American government over the Robert McCartney murder, and then involved in that as well, the aftermath of the Northern Bank.
Now, your book is divided into four parts, really. Part one is the heist, and we've been talking about that. Part two is the hunt, and then part three is the trial. And then there's an epilogue, a kind of a part four, which actually contains verbatim, a transcript of the call made by Chris Ward on the instruction of the people who had been holding his family as to when he should call the police, and I suppose he was free to say what he wanted at this stage. But when you read the transcript and how the constable answering the phone must have been absolutely in a state of shock hearing what this man, Chris Ward, was recounting.
Absolutely. And he was after the robbery, so the robbers arrived in a van in a little side street. Again, I have to keep saying this, within sight of Belfast City Hall on a busy shopping night, with people getting on and off buses. They're parked in a little side street. Chris and Kevin have to wheel out cages, tall metal cages packed with banknotes disguised as rubbish, put them into the van. They go away after the first run of taking away millions and come back for a second load. And then at the end of that, they said, "Right, that's it, lads, you can go home." And so the instructions are that Kevin and Chris are to go to Chris's family home, where they believe they'll both be reunited with their families. That wasn't the case for Kevin. But once Kevin has left to go to his own house, Chris is told to wait a while and then phone in the police. He makes a phone call to the police. The police constable on the emergency line picks up, and he starts to tell the story of what's happened, his family having been taken hostage. He gets to the bit where he has to take out the 1.2 million as it was in the hold all, and handed over at a bus stop. And you can hear the surprise in the constable's voice. And she said, "Oh my goodness, is that, was that it?" And he says, "No, that was just the beginning. They came back for more." And she says, "How much more?" And he says, I think at that stage, he said something like 18 million or 20 million or something. And, you know, again, her shock is audible. So it was, you know, the way the whole thing unfolded was quite extraordinary and immensely well planned. The degree of planning that went into it was absolutely huge, huge enough that you couldn't imagine that there would be any other organization or gang capable of it than the Provisional IRA.
Well, we will pause it there because I don't want to give the entire game away, how the trail led to the south and there was a trial and all of that. But let the reader find out exactly what happened, those who did not live through it and know exactly how the whole thing ended up. The book is called The Northern Bank Job, The Heist and How They Got Away With It. It's published by, it's an Apollo book by Head Zeus, and its author is Glenn Patterson. Glenn, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you very much indeed.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.